This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Brookline is the first jurisdiction on the planet, to quote Forbes magazine, to enforce a generational ban on tobacco. And this month, the state's Supreme Judicial Court said they have the right to do that. No one born after January 1st, 2000 will be able to buy tobacco products in Brookline ever. People born before that date will be able to for their whole lives. And both people who love the move and people who don't say the ordinance could well come to your town. Joining us in Studio 2, Peter Brennan, Executive Director of the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association, and Mark Gottlieb, Executive Director of the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University's School of Law. Peter, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. Mark, welcome to you as well.
Good morning.
So we want to kind of pull apart what Brookline did, why the court ruled the way that it did, what the tensions here are, what it means for the Commonwealth. There are a lot of questions here, especially when a town in Massachusetts does something no one basically in the world has ever done and enforced before. So I'm going to start with what Brookline did. And Mark, I think I'll have you just give us the basics. What did Brookline do?
Well, Brookline has been very forward-thinking around tobacco prevention policy for many, many years. And they were one of the first towns in Massachusetts to ban flavors before that became a statewide law, for example. And they were thinking, what is the next thing? What if you're a parent, you know, do you want your kid to start using tobacco at age 18, at age 21, at age 25, at age 30? Well, of course, you never want your kid to get hooked on tobacco products, whether they're cigarettes or vapes.
So what did Brookline do?
So what Brookline did is they decided that we're going to just stop tobacco sales with the next generation, not affecting anybody who currently is able to buy tobacco products, but the next generation. And they chose the date after which anybody who is born cannot ever buy tobacco products in Brookline at January 1st, 2000.
And can Brookline retailers sell tobacco, I guess, what, up until there's no one living in Brookline anymore?
Right.
How does that part work?
Right. It's a very slow total phase out and or ban of all tobacco sales that will take a generation or two to become a complete ban, because eventually no one in Brookline will have been born before the year 2000.
Okay. So I'll move now to Peter Brennan. So Mark, not hard to tell how you feel about it. And we did obviously bring in somebody who likes this move and somebody who doesn't like this move. So obviously, Peter, you're going to be the one who doesn't like this move. I want to stay on this question of, so what happens in selling? Could one sell to people from out of Brookline? Okay, so I'm going to keep this super clean. It's the year 2100, right? So we probably don't have anybody left who can legally purchase tobacco living in Brookline. Can a retailer carry and sell to people who come from outside? Is that just not practical? What are the implications of this from a sales standpoint?
So there's a number of issues from a sales standpoint that make it a logistical nightmare as is, because right now you're already tasking the overburdened clerks with checking the IDs of different adults that are over the age of 21. You know, we're a very highly regulated marketplace. We only sell to people that are over 21 years old. So this is an adult ban on all nicotine products, not just tobacco products. So in the year 2100, no, I guess nobody would probably be alive that would qualified to purchase any type of nicotine product in Brookline. The bigger issue is, as we scale up to that, you know, how are our clerks supposed to determine when somebody was born? This is already a very stressful job. Our clerks at our retailers are, you know, they deal with all aspects of humanity. People come in with different things on their mind, and many times our clerks are subjected to violence, if you follow the news. What's the impact going to be when a 25-year-old can't buy a pack of cigarettes, a vape product, a nicotine pouch,
okay,
because of a bylaw? So that makes it confusing right off the bat.
All right, so let's stay there for a second. As I understand it, when Massachusetts moved in 2018 to change the age from 18 to 21, there was some grandfathering there. So there was already complexity for clerks in stores to have to check IDs based on different ages and standings. That's been the case since 2018. Is that correct?
There was, and we actually supported the move to just make it 21 for everybody, because what you saw was a patchwork of local regulations popping up. In some jurisdictions, it was 18, and some it was 21. Okay, let's level the playing field. If the state determines that the legal age to purchase nicotine products is 21, then we can abide by that, and we can train our retailers, and they can check IDs. And that's the way we handle marijuana, and that's the way we handle alcohol and other age-restricted products. So, you know, that's a fair point. And frankly, if a jurisdiction wants to not sell nicotine, like they can choose to not sell alcohol or not sell marijuana, then we support that too, to some extent. I mean, we wouldn't support a local bylaw.
So your pushback here is this complexity.
But it's a little bit easier to follow than this is.
Let me come back to Mark Gottlieb from Northeastern University School of Law. The argument, and I want to pull this part a little bit apart a little bit. Brookline has made a different move here with tobacco products. We're not just talking about cigarettes. We're talking about tobacco products than with marijuana or alcohol. The reasoning there.
Well, I think first of all, there may very well be other types of regulations that other communities can enact. Regarding, you know, alcohol or cannabis products, tobacco has a uniquely deadly, lethal history in Massachusetts. And I think one of the appealing aspects of this policy is it's a great demonstration of how health policy in the Commonwealth is really has been a laboratory of democracy, in that we have a long and rich history of towns having a lot of autonomy over what they restrict and what they don't restrict. We did that with the smoking bans that began in Newton in the late 1980s before they ultimately became statewide. And then, you know, Needham was the first place, I believe, in the country to raise the minimum sales age for tobacco to 21. Now that's actually national policy, and it came out of this laboratory of democracy here in the Commonwealth.
So we're with Mark Gottlieb, who is at Northeastern University School of Law, and Peter Brennan, who is with the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association. And what we are looking at is not just the fact that Brookline has created a generational ban on tobacco consumption, which basically says that over time, anyone born after January 1st, 2000 will not be able to consume tobacco in Brookline. But the fact that this month the Supreme Judicial Court said, based on this idea that local municipalities have the right to designate such laws or ordinances, it upheld Brookline's move. Brookline actually passed this in 2020. It went into effect in 2021. And we're looking at the tensions on this. So I want to kind of stay in the good faith space of these tensions here. Peter Brennan, I'll come back to you. You've said you worry about violence against clerks. Often we don't pass public policy worrying about the bad behavior of people who are angry about that public policy. That's an externality for another, for lack of a better word, that we deal with after the fact. There was a failure to push back at the Supreme Judicial Court level. Is there move to go further up the chain, and on what grounds? Are there going to be further appeals, and if so, on what grounds?
Well, I can't get too deep into the legal weeds on this because we do have attorneys looking at it and seeing if there's a path forward at the federal Supreme Court. But I would say that what the Brookline ban did was ban the purchase of nicotine products for adults, for a class of adults. However, another class of adults still enjoys that right to purchase these products. So this is not a youth smoking ban, despite how it may be phrased. This is an adult smoking ban, an adult nicotine usage ban. This will prevent in a few years, say a suburban 40-year-old father from picking up a cigar to go to the golf course. And that's going to be the impact of this. This is not going to impact youth smoking rates. Youth smoking rates are at record lows. Adult smoking rates are at record lows. So the public health impact of this will be zero. These products are still going to be in the marketplace. They're going to be in the illegal marketplace.
If it reduces smoking, the public health impact won't be zero.
I don't see how it will. These products are still going to be sold in a neighboring jurisdiction or somewhere else where they can be imported and sold illegally.
So
you can see that that's happening now.
Let's stay there for a second, and I'll come back to you, Mark Gottlieb. There is data to suggest that when smoking policy gets more restrictive, you see a spike in black market sales. I mean, we see enforcement data from, task forces in 2021, 2022, 2023 in Massachusetts that suggests that from vaping products to cigars to smokeless tobacco to cigarettes, there was an increase in black market or under the table sales to offset more restrictive policies. Is that a risk for a town like Brookline, that the over-the-counter goes away and the under-the-counter steps up?
Well, I think it would be with other types of sales restrictions, but not with this one, and let me explain why. This only affects people who are not tobacco users, who have never had the ability to purchase tobacco products. There is not going to be a demand among people who have never purchased tobacco products to want to go across a border or two or a state border to purchase these products.
No curiosity?
I think there could be very trivial numbers of people who will do that. It's not going to create a black market that is a threat to that creating a large criminal enterprise, because the beauty of this policy is it doesn't affect any existing tobacco user, only the future tobacco
so
user.
So the argument is that the drive for black market is among people already using, not
right.
people who have not yet used.
And I think with any kind of product, if you take it away, people are going to search it out. But this isn't being taken away from anybody who had it.
So here, okay, I have a burning question for each of you that are just on my mind about this. And Peter Brennan, I'll start with you. If you follow the arc of policy over the last two generations, it feels clear that the United States and communities in the United States will be increasingly restrictive on tobacco policy. How can convenience stores adapt? Is this not just a question of this is the next thing to have to adapt to?
Well, I think our stores are already adapting. If you go into any of our stores now, we've really gotten away from the Cokes and Smokes of the past, where stores relied on nicotine, they relied on lottery products. Now you can go in and get gourmet meals at many of our stores. So the transition's already happening there. But back to the illegal products, you know, we saw last month 300,000 illegal vapes, flavored vapes, were seized in Massachusetts in one sting. That's one incident. Now, where are those going? Those are going to kids in the black market. And that's a direct result of the flavor ban that Massachusetts passed in 2020, because those products are no longer sold in a regulated marketplace at our stores where we check IDs. So now the safety is not known. They're in the illegal marketplace. They're funding black market activity. And that's just the reality. If you look at the numbers and
okay.
the seizures from the state police, DOR.
So a rebuttal there. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm mindful of your schedule. We've got limited time, and I want to get this last...
I can stick around a little bit longer if we need to.
Okay, I want to get this last question into Mark Gottlieb. Here's the question that is on my mind for you. What happens to the social fabric of a community when a 45-year-old and a 25-year-old are standing together and a policy applies to the 25-year-old and the 45-year-old doesn't have to submit to the same policy?
I think the 25-year-old looks to the 45-year-old who is nicotine dependent and has to pay large amounts of money every month to maintain that addiction with pity, and is grateful that they don't have to go through that, because the policy that the town that they lived in passed prevents that from happening to them. People start smoking, start using tobacco products when they're adolescents and when they're teens, and almost always live to regret that.
And so you see no risk of friction with a policy that's only applied to a portion of the population and not another portion.
I think tobacco products are largely reviled. And I think, you know, we've seen dramatic drops in smoking, for example, by young people, because these have been denormalized. I think society is ready for that. And more than half of Americans now favor a total ban on tobacco sales.
Fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you both coming in with the spirit in which I was pushing you on this. I really do appreciate it. Mark Gottlieb is Executive Director of the Public Health Advocacy at Northeastern University's School of Law, where he teaches public health advocacy. And Peter Brennan is the Executive Director of the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association. Wanted to get that all out for both of you. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.